The committee will come to order.
No.
Please take your seat. There is a quorum. Representative Szymanski, would you like to move the last motion?
Yes, I would, Madam Chair.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. Representative Kahn, welcome to our committee.
To be here specifically, since I know you're a co-author of the bill and have been a strong supporter over the years. I just want to give a short... there are two people who wish to speak for the bill.
I'm going to move the... Unless you want to move your bill.
No,
I can. I'll move the bill. House Floral 2168 is now before the committee for consideration.
Okay, thank you. Let me say a few words about the history of hemp in the country. It has a very long and honorable history. The word canvas is actually derived from cannabis and was the material used by European artists to paint their masterpieces. The first draft of the Declaration of Independence was written on hemp, and Betsy Ross used a hemp-based material for her famous flag. George Washington and Thomas Jefferson not only grew hemp, but urged their fellow farmers to sow widely the hemp seed. For more than 2,000 years, hemp served as the backbone of the paper industry, and even now is one of the cheapest and best sources of high-quality cellulose for making paper. Hemp production peaked worldwide just after World War II, with tens of thousands of acres grown in Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, and other states. And with the advent of synthetic fibers and eradication efforts by state and federal drug authorities, DEA's regulations presently define the non-hallucinogenic industrial hemp as marijuana. Industrial hemp disappeared as a mainstream product. And there are more than 25,000 uses for this product from the agricultural crop. We can also talk about the environmental benefits of growing hemp in terms of its lack of need of pesticides and so forth. In Minnesota, there's a history of hemp in Minnesota, of legislation on this. I have worked on this for several years. In the late 90s, Roger Moe was the chief author in the Senate, and then after, and at some point, former Representative Steve Daler was a strong proponent and worked on this issue. In 1999, Governor Ventura signed an omnibus bill that included a mandate seeking federal permission to cultivate hemp. The mandate required state officials to submit an application for federal permits to begin research on growing industrial hemp and establish the state registry for farmers seeking to grow the plant. And so we're now there has been research at the University of Minnesota, and I think, Madam Chairman, I think I'd like to. There's also been strong support from farm groups throughout the country, throughout the state, and throughout the country. The most active legislative work on states in the country is from our neighboring state of North Dakota. And I've had the chief proponent of hemp legislation in North Dakota is probably someone who couldn't be more different from me. He's a Republican president of his church board, farmer, and he's actively, his name is David Monson. I don't know if any of you have met him or talked to him. I haven't had conversations with him this year, but I have had conversations with him in the past, and he's been actively involved. So North Dakota has moved far ahead of us in terms of putting the regulations in place, and he farms very close to the Canadian border, and the frustration for him has been, I think, when there was a fungus that sort of eradicated his barley crop, looking across the border and seeing his neighbors across the border with this much more profitable crop in place. So I just wanted to point out that this isn't a liberal inner city farm to do bad things for the state. I would like to, I don't know what direction, I guess I'd like to start with Professor Weblin, who's from the University of Minnesota and will tell us about the work that he's done, and he has a slideshow presentation, and then we'll go to testimony for the Farmers Union and so forth. Welcome.
Thank you, Representative Tom, and thank you.
Say your name again for the tape.
I'm George Weblin. I'll wake up my computer. I'll put it on the screen for you. I'm a professor in plant biology at the University of Minnesota, PhD in biology, and I've been a DEA registered cannabis researcher since 2002. Proceed. All right. I think many of the things that I have to say by way of introduction, Representative Kahn has already covered. I got into this research following the 1999 mandate for research on industrial hemp, and as a junior professor at the university, I was perhaps the only one naive enough to follow on a research lead as controversial and difficult to fund as work on industrial hemp. But recognizing the potential for industrial hemp as a crop alternative for Minnesota farmers and the great public interest in hemp, I followed on this lead. I'll give you a little bit of background on the plant and then talk about the science that we've done over the past few years. As Representative Kahn mentioned, this is a plant with a long history of cultivation. It's one of the earliest cultivated plants with archaeological remains dating back nearly 10,000 years. It was cultivated throughout the ancient world, involved in supporting the development of all the major civilizations. In ancient China, it was the staple grain, the seeds being highly nutritious. The stems, a source of durable fiber for rope, cloth, twine, and a number of many other materials. The dried flowers of the plant have been long used as a recreational drug and in medicine. In American history, the founding fathers were hemp farmers. This was one of the first crops that was introduced to the New World, and Thomas Jefferson, in his Garden Notes, wrote that we may lay aside tobacco entirely. The more of it we lay aside, the happier I shall be. It's vastly desirable to be getting away with our domestic cultivation of hemp. And, of course, Washington was also a hemp farmer. And the American hemp industry flourished during the war effort in World War II as a source of cordage and canvas, and during that time the Minnesota hemp industry was active but declined after the war, as Representative Kahn had mentioned, but thanks to the widespread propagation of the plant during the early 20th century, it escaped from cultivation and is a brutal weed all over the state. Why might we be interested in hemp? Data from the USDA that I only have going up to 1999 shows that in recent years there's been strong demand, domestic demand for renewable alternatives to oil-based plastic synthetic fibers. Now, this is important for Minnesota because unlike some renewable fiber sources like cotton, hemp can be grown in our cool climate. The fibers are also more durable than cotton, so they have a variety of applications, including increasingly use in cement bonded fiber boards in the automotive industry and other industries. The plant for fiber production requires considerably less energy than wood pulp, and it can also reduce dependence on forests as a source of paper. There's interest in using hemp as a biofuel, as this is an annual crop that can be grown on a rotation. There is the possibility of hemp to serve as an alternative to crops like corn and soybeans in the Dakotas. There's great interest in using this as an alternative to wheat and barley. And what we have is a situation where the domestic demand continues to increase, but this can only be supplied by foreign importation because hemp cannot be grown legally in the United States. And that is because the Controlled Substances Act of 1970 prohibits all domestic cultivation of the plant cannabis. Why is this? Hemp and marijuana belong to the same species, and they look a lot alike. Under the Controlled Substances Act, the Drug Enforcement Administration is responsible for the regulation of the plant cannabis, not the USDA. And in order to remedy this situation, an amendment to the Controlled Substances Act may be required at the federal level. The Act states that marijuana means all plants of the part, all parts of the plant cannabis, whether growing or not, the seeds thereof, the resin, and so forth. But the Act specifically exempted the mature stalks of the plant, fiber produced from the stalks, oil or cake made from the seeds, and so forth, or any other part of the seed that is sterilized such as the plant is incapable of germinating and growing. So this act creates a situation where hemp products can and are used in the United States. There's commerce in hemp fiber and hemp seed. However, this market cannot be supplied by American farmers. There is a lot of confusion surrounding this issue, and I want to give you a little bit of background on the state of affairs and what the science has to say about hemp and marijuana. And my introduction to this topic is through one of my professors, Richard Evans Schultes, who is a botanist who worked on many economic plants, especially drug plants. And here he is in a police file photograph from the 60s. He was charged by the federal government in the 70s to study cannabis throughout its range. And here he is with fiber hemp in Mexico. You can see it's quite a tall crop here. He also traveled to Afghanistan, and here he is with the Mujahideen when our country was involved with the Mujahideen in Afghanistan. Schultes went to the source of the drug plant marijuana. What he found is that there's great variation within this one species. And that's true of any species that has undergone a long history of breeding. A good example would be our dogs and cats, and the great variation we see in among breeds. My research has focused on trying to understand the basis for this kind of variation and try to bring some clarity to the difference between hemp and marijuana as under the Controlled Substances Act. So there is great confusion here. And as a biologist, I have to start by pointing out that what we observe, the phenotype of the plant, is both a product of the genes and the environment. So, for example, there are different genetic types, which we might refer to as marijuana and hemp, and they appear different from one another in some respects, but these different types also take on different forms depending on the conditions in which they're grown. For instance, growing the plant at low density will lead to much bushier looking hemp and marijuana plants than growing the plants at high density. Now, the fundamental difference that we can draw between hemp and marijuana varieties, these distinct genetic types, has to do with the chemistry of the plant. There are two major molecules that are unique to the genus cannabis, tetrahydrocannabinol, THC, and cannabidiol, CBD. The ratio, the relative ratio of these molecules is radically different between the two types. There tends to be more THC than CBD in hemp plants and or in marijuana plants. In hemp plants, there tends to be much more CBD than THC. If we just look at the overall quantity of THC, which is the psychoactive drug in marijuana, there is great, great variation. And marijuana varieties typically have on the order of 2 to 25% of the drug dry weight, whereas hemp plants have less than 0.3% THC dry weight. Biochemists have studied the pathways that lead to the production of these molecules in the plant, and THC and CBD appear to derive from a common precursor molecule called cannabidiol, and that molecule is modified in a biochemical pathway to produce either THC or CBD, or a third molecule called CBC, but it is the relative proportions of these two major molecules that seem to be controlled by a simple genetic switch. You flip on the switch for THC, you get a marijuana plant that produces a lot of THC. You flip that switch off, you get a hemp plant that produces proportionally more CBD. In fact, some of the early work characterizing these compounds in cannabis was done at the University of Minnesota using Minnesota wild hemp that had escaped from cultivation, and chromatography to identify these chemicals in extract. The chemicals are located in special hairs that are produced by the plant, and these hairs are particularly concentrated on the female flowers of the plant. That's why the drug marijuana is derived from the flowers. Looking at these flowers with scanning electron microscopy, we can see that the special structures are stalks, glands with globular heads, and inside these globular heads, the drug is localized. Now, we've done some surveys of drug content in different varieties, different cultivars of cannabis, in commercial marijuana as well as hemp. We, under permit from the Drug Enforcement Administration, imported marijuana seeds from Holland and commercial hemp seeds from Canada. We also screened populations around the metro area in Shakopee and in Minneapolis, just off of New Brighton Boulevard, where this stuff just comes up. And what we found is that, as predicted, the marijuana varieties have a THC to CBD ratio that's greatly in excess of one, and the hemp cultivars, including our escaped weeds around here have a ratio much less than one. In fact, if we look at the flowers under scanning electron microscopy, we also see some differences in the size of these globular heads that are the source of the drug. So what we see in looking at this species is that we have some strong differences between hemp and marijuana, and these are the result of breeding efforts. As any plant or animal breeder knows, if you select for a certain trait over generations, you can drive a population to optimize the level or value of a particular trait. So hemp breeders interested in the fiber and the seed, and increasingly under Canadian and European law, have been interested in breeding down drug content as much as possible to meet European and Canadian guidelines. Hemp cultivars have been selected that have much less THC than any natural population, whereas drug breeders have been very active, particularly over the last couple of decades, in increasing potency, as the more potent marijuana, the higher the street value. So here we have a strong difference between hemp and marijuana varieties, and it's genetically based, and my research has focused on trying to identify the nature of that genetic basis. Now, one of the issues that has come up in considering the effort to regulate hemp and marijuana differently is the possibility that marijuana might be hidden in hemp farmers' fields. And I would argue that this is not possible, because cross-pollination spoils the quality of the drug crop. Certainly, there's nothing to prevent a hemp farmer from attempting to grow marijuana within their field, but what they'll find is that the pollen from the hemp will fertilize the flowers of the marijuana and result in a drug with a far inferior street value. And in fact, the marijuana illicit industry in marijuana is booming. It's a $35 billion business in the United States, domestic cultivation. And I find it unlikely that the people involved in that business are going to get into serious rural agriculture for the reason I just stated. Now, laws distinguishing cannabis varieties are needed to regulate hemp farming and industry apart from illicit drug production and distribution. Right now, the Drug Enforcement Administration is charged with treating this species as a controlled substance. And until legislation can change that situation, we're not likely to get very far with the hemp industry. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Are there any questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is growing the hemp or marijuana in hemp fields, it would affect the seed production, but it wouldn't affect the quality of the plants being grown on that specific year. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, thank you for your question. It is true that the seeds that would be produced from such cross-pollination would be genetically different, you know, from either parent. The issue is that it is the unpollinated flowers of cannabis that make the drug marijuana and make it potent. When a marijuana crop is not pollinated, the flowers, in a sense, they over-mature and they produce copious amounts of this resin allocating resources to producing more of this resin, resources that would have been allocated to the production of seed. And so what one ends up with is a drug that is less potent through the development of the plant. There's no genetic change there. Am I being clear on the difference?
Just want to make sure that I understand, and so that it will actually affect the quality of the marijuana in the year that they're growing together in the same field, not just the seed produced that year.
That's right. Yeah, it will do. Hiding marijuana in a hemp field would do both those things. It would result in an inferior marijuana crop that year, and it would also result in inferior marijuana seed for subsequent generations.
Are there any other questions? Representative Szymanski?
The question I have is the DEA regulation. Is there any anticipation that that will ever change, or is the DEA going to, you know, for years to come, still regulate the production of hemp?
The position of the DEA is very clear on this issue. They are not interested in recognizing differences between hemp and marijuana. In fact, in approving my research, they make the administration makes no distinction whether I import drug seeds from Holland or hemp seeds from Canada. It's all the same to the DEA as they interpret the Controlled Substances Act as it reads. And this has been tested recently in North Dakota with the hemp legislation that was passed. It led Representative Monson to become the first North Dakota farmer in recent history to apply for to apply to the DEA for a permit to grow industrial hemp. That application was denied on the grounds that he was proposing to grow a controlled substance. He filed a lawsuit, and that was heard in federal court this past year, and the judge in that case ruled that this is a matter for the Congress to take up in amending the Controlled Substances Act to regulate hemp and marijuana differently. Until that is done, the DEA is unlikely to change its position.
Representative Salsky, I've got to practice that a little more.
Not as easy as Smith, Madam Chair. Thank you. I've got a question really that follows up on Representative Foss and what he had to say. I haven't been into marijuana patches lately, but do they smoke the leaves too?
No. Well, there are leaves associated with the flowers. It's what we call an inflorescence in botany. It's a flower stalk that has lots of flowers and leaves mixed in, but the primary leaves that are responsible for the growth of the plant are not sold as marijuana.
Okay. So the apical leaves, are they affected by those cross pollinations in terms of the THC level?
They are, in the sense that these flower stalks, when they go unpollinated, continue to develop, but rather than developing seed, they develop these very dense resinous hairs, and that occurs over a period of weeks, and then the crop's harvested and sold. So, yes, the leaves are affected by that pollination, in the sense that in a pollinated marijuana crop, you will still have marijuana. You will still have something that has THC and potentially a good deal of it, but the crop doesn't fetch the market, the street value that an unpollinated crop would.
Okay, thank you. One other question, Madam Chair. I'm curious about the aggressiveness of this plant. Hemp is an annual. It's also a noxious weed in Minnesota. It's on our noxious weed list. How aggressive can we expect it to be in its spread?
Well, the plant has been in Minnesota for 150 years at least, and I think we've seen what it does when it escapes from cultivation. It gets into the mix with plants that are aggressive at colonizing disturbed sites, roadside ditches, birds disperse the seed, and so it shows up under the eaves of barns all over Minnesota because birds are nesting there and they drop the seeds. So it gets around, as do most crops that will set seed.
So could we expect, if there was an industrial hemp field grown, because of the vast number of plants, that there would be an increase in noxious weed production via birds and other carriers in adjacent areas?
Potentially. There is that potential. I'm not an expert on invasive, on invasive species and what they can do. But I think there's certainly plenty of evidence for cannabis escaping from cultivation.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you. Madam Chairman, my next speaker is a familiar person to the legislature and to this committee. And one of the things, if we have time, because it's not, it's very interesting, I think, Professor Wiebrun's new research is actually trying to develop a more distinctive plant to meet the DEA's concern. And if people are interested in that, he can talk about that. But
okay. Well,
Representative Peterson, like Governor, you're always talking about it.
Thank you very much, Representative Tom, and good day to Mary Ellen and some of the people that I've known in the past.
Would you state your name?
I'm going to. Madam Chair, member of the committee, for the record, my name is Doug Peterson. I serve as president of the Minnesota Farmers Union. I'm here today to speak on behalf of our members in support of House File 2168. This thing has been around before many years. I remember sitting on the Ag Committee and listening to some of the very same arguments and some of the same points made. But this bill would also set up a development for allowing industrial hemp to be grown in Minnesota. This has been around for a number of years, but it has come to light more in the last couple of years because the state of North Dakota has recently moved legislation that would allow farmers to grow industrial hemp. And I believe the appeal of the denial of the lawsuit, and there's now been appeal from the state of North Dakota to the government that would have they're trying to appeal the decision of the court. I might also comment that this is one commodity that you can grow in Canada and export to the United States, but not vice versa. And I can tell you that the support for the legislation, especially comes from members in counties that border Canada as well, are well aware of this issue. Industrial hemp, members, is for farmers simply another option for a low-input sustainable crop. Hemp seeds were known a long time ago for its healthy protein, rich oil, and the stalk's outer fibers used for clothing, canvas, rope, and textile bags, and were recycled into paper pulp. And I believe testimony of years ago also stated that if you put the hemp fiber in a post-consumer recyclable paper pattern, so we can recycle, that new recyclable paper will last seven times longer because of the length of the fiber. So that has got a lot to do with recyclability. You're also aware that the get my notes right. Declaration of Independence, probably the Constitution also, was drafted on hemp paper. And some of the finest Bibles are still printed on hemp paper. The woody core fiber of hemp stocks are used for construction and also in fuel. In the early 20th century, hemp-derived cellulose was promoted as an affordable and renewable raw material for plastics. And Henry Ford knew of this material long ago and even built a prototype car from bioplastics material using agricultural fibers such as hemp. Our members are aware of many uses of hemp. The hemp paper, hemp foods, hemp body care products, hemp clothes, hemp biofuels. And I was going to bring in a rope from my barn, okay, from the haymow, as you would call haymows, or where you store loose hay or baled hay, about 125-foot rope, and it is made out of hemp. It's that good, it's that strong, and I can remember now I'm going to talk like an old-timer, Madam Chair. The old-timers, when the rope would break, they would sometimes have to weave it back together, and they always talked that they had a hemp rope, they didn't have to worry about it, because the fibers were so smooth and so easy to weave back together or splice together, then it was twice as strong at the break. So it's a pretty durable product. And I can't hardly not sit in front of an agriculture committee and not talk about a little bit about ethanol. The energy efficient production of ethanol from the cellulosic biomass, such as wheat, straw, hemp, flax, and corn stuff, that will become commercially viable. Hemp grown for both seed and biomass is a stock yield of 3.5 tons per acre, which would make it an economical source for cellulosic ethanol production. Farmers in the Midwest could also profit from addition to their soybean and corn rotations. Madam Chair and members, Farmers Union of Minnesota is aware of the problems of the North Dakota situation, in which the law was passed, but has been stonewalled by the federal government. I want to emphasize that Minnesota Farmers Union has been told that it will take federal legislation or rulemaking to move forward on this issue, but the Minnesota legislature, you today, can send a message to the federal government by passing this legislation and working with North Dakota to show there is an interest and demand by farmers to allow industrial hemp to be grown in Minnesota. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, for your time and consideration on this matter. Thank you.
Are there any questions or comments? Representative.
Madam Chair, Mr. Peterson, in developing a hemp industry, years ago we had a hemp industry in Minnesota. How would it be different today in terms of cultivation, harvest, processing? What are the Canadians doing right now?
Well, I've never grown hemp or marijuana, okay? I couldn't. Anyway, hemp would be drilled in like a wheat crop, and it would be very narrow spacing. It's an annual crop, so it would have to be harvested every year, not to be left in the field. I would suspect that because the fiber, in other words, the height of the plant, because the narrower you plant a seed together and they grow, the taller they will grow. The farther spacing, the bushier it will become. Also, that would make a difference between the fact that you have a bushy marijuana plant versus a tall, skinny hemp plant. There would have to be a harvest capability of harvesting a plant that's anywhere from 8 to 10 feet tall. So that in itself is a little bit different. Corn, 8 feet tall, some sized corn probably taller than that, but not much taller than that. So you'd have to be able to chop it, you'd have to be able to dry it and store it, and then the moving of it to a processing plant. And I would envision much of this would be much like the flax straw that we used to have before plastics came, linseed oil, and we also had a lot of linen made. We had flax straw factories in a lot of rural Minnesota small towns. And I think, anytime that you can interject a new crop with a new potential for different types of equipment, and I call that short line equipment, sort of like, example, people that are doing alfalfa or hay and those kinds of things, those are short line equipment. If you talk to implement dealers, when they had short line equipment, they actually made some pretty good profits on that stuff. I think it would be very much to a very, very tall wheat crop or a very, very thin rowed corn crop.
Any other discussion? Representative Sturdall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, I know that maybe in your earlier testimony you talked about it before I got in, but back in, in World War II, they were doing this extensively, and right on Highway 12, now it's a turkey, turkey farm, but just east of Grove City, there was the hemp plant. And as I grew up, I never knew what hemp was, but everyone, my family always referred to there. There's the hemp plant. So, I know that it was an important agricultural product, decades ago. I was wondering if the Department of Agriculture had any opinions on this bill.
Madam Chairman, one of the points I would like to make is, North Dakota has agreed to take the lead in this, and so instead of duplicating their process, I then have an amendment that's in your packet, which would specifically mean that we wouldn't do any of the things that could be expensive, i.e. set rules, set out the license application, and so forth, until it's already been approved, not only by Congress, but if we're even going, you could just say until Congress changes the law, which would be one possibility. We've actually even gone before that, until the DEA has already granted an application somewhere, so that we know that we're clear. But the nice thing is, if we were to pass this bill, we wouldn't be doing anything. We would not be acting as aggressively as North Dakota. Right. And again, if people, I'm usually not the most conservative person around, so if anyone wants to move in that direction, I probably would. But this would just say that we'd be, after the problems were taken care of on the federal level, we'd be ready to go. And it's kind of like sending a much stronger resolution to Congress that we think the states in the upper Midwest could be the ones to take this, on.
Madam Chair, I can move the A1 amendment if you want.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
All those in
discussion.
Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment. We have someone from the Agriculture Department.
Department of Agriculture.
Representative Erdahl, did you have a question?
Just a quick question before Ms. Cheney makes her statement. Are there any acreage limitations or anything with this? I mean, I'm envisioning the possibility of community education plots, garden plots.
Well, I think right now you'd have to go through the problem that Professor Weidman talked about.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I think if you read the bill, that would all probably be done in the licensing section and the rules section and so forth, of which we delay implementation of until we were sure that we had the approval of the federal government.
Okay.
Quintini?
Hi, Quintini with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. The agency has not taken a position on this bill. We have not gotten a fiscal note request yet for it, so we haven't undergone the complete analysis of how much it would actually cost and what type of fee we would require in order to implement the program.
Okay, thank you. Any further discussion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Johnson.
Well, I just want to lend my support. Obviously, I'm one of the co-authors along with Gunther and Tigerton and Hansen and Hilty and others, many others. Again, just history. We did pass this under Chairman Simseth at the time, our colleague from the Red River Valley, and obviously he understood the importance to that area of the state in particular for this And then, obviously, we were unsuccessful. That legislation said we should apply for the permits from the federal government. You know, this bill is like Representative Kahn said, is much less on that note, because we don't have to spend the time or the energy or the money to do that. We're just simply having this in place if and when the feds approve it. And like Representative Erdahl said, this is historically, we have grown this in Minnesota. We have a hemp plant, too, in Faribault County, north of Wells, where I grew up. It was actually a World War II German prisoner camp, and they further processed the hemp products there at the hemp plant a mile north of Wells, and then it turned into a Del Monte warehouse after that back in the 70s. But there's, again, recognizing, you can already buy the products, you can buy the anything that comes from Canada. Canada does grow it, so it's not like a mystery crop as far as, it's not a Jerusalem artichoke type thing where it can escape. We already know how it grows and what it does in Canada, so it's simply moving it across the border into Minnesota, and the research and agronomics is pretty complete on that. And obviously it's not potent, and I want to throw that out again. Even if they're, and by the way, it's already escaped. It's all over in Candy White County. I can walk you to plots and ditches where it grows every year. I mean, it's already there. So the seeds are already spread in that way. And frankly, as was mentioned, any cross-pollination actually diffuses the potency of someone who might have a backyard plot of it. So if the birds are spreading it, you're actually diffusing the potency of crops that may be grown and would probably help in the drug enforcement area, because you'd have less product there. So, again, I think it's a good bill. It's an excellent crop. And, again, as the chairman has said many times, she's a home economist, and it's a beautiful cloth to work with. And it's people that sew and stitch really like hemp fiber, and that's why you see a lot of hemp clothing and articles for sale in our stores around Minnesota, because it is a very good product. And again, I want to add that our next generation of fuels, this could be a big deal. You know, as we develop, we need biodiesel we're moving, we need other things. The oils in here could really lend to a next generation fuel crop. So I voted for it back then. I'll vote for it again. And again, my farmers in my area greatly appreciate you bringing this, Representative Kahn, because as you know, they do understand that this is a crop that works very well in Minnesota. And most of them can remember when they were kids, or their grandparents will tell them about a growing hemp in Minnesota. So it's a very good bill, and I appreciate you bringing it.
Madam Chairman, if I can just add a few words on the history. In 1997, the Minnesota Senate passed the bill that authorizing the Agricultural Experiment Station and the State Department to study the feasibility of industrial hemp, including field demonstration products. That was passed on a 60-0 vote. It overwhelmingly passed the House Agriculture Committee, but then the end of the session, we didn't get to a vote of the full House. So it's not a dangerous vote to take. And just also talking about, I thought I had passed some of these out, but I guess we didn't get it out. But the California Nutiva, a California hemp company that sells hemp bars, shakes, and oils, had sales rise from under 1 million 3 years ago to 4.5 million last year. And I don't think we've seen that kind of growth for any agricultural product.
Is there any other discussion? If not, I move House File 2168 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Public Safety. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The bill passed.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Chairman. Members. We have a little other business. Bill referrals are in your folders. These bills have been referred to the Veterans Affairs Division. On Monday, we'll be hearing division reports on veterans' bills. Also, I would like to remind you that if you have bills that you want to be heard, you need to get them in quickly. So, thank you. Hearing no other business, committee is adjourned.